So this is a talk that has been prepared by Bruce Harrison, a colleague of mine with whom I have been working together for many years. He is a geomorphologist and soil scientist. And also I want to acknowledge Brian Borchers and Molly Witt. This is, I think, a very nice demonstration of how we can use a series of soil moisture images in one area. And our assumption is, and I think that is a very reasonable assumption, that in semi-arid regions, soil boundaries often reflect differences in soil moisture regime. Because we all know that the wetness of a soil will determine what kind of soil is developing. And therefore, then, we think, our hypothesis is, that soil boundaries can be identified using field soil moisture measurements. But of course, it would take a lot of expense and effort. And so we then think that if you use the soil moisture images that I just described for classification efforts, that we can replace field soil moisture measurements with the soil moisture maps that we can get from Landsat. And since we have a Landsat archive now of 30 years, basically in most locations you will be able to get some Landsat soil moisture maps that can assist you for your soil boundary mapping. The technique that I and others use is a technique developed by Webster, is the split-moving window technique, where you compare, so here we have a transect of, say, soil moisture measurements with the neutron probe, or soil moisture pixels on the Landsat soil moisture image, and so we can compare these five locations with these five locations by doing a t-test or another statistic, and then we can plot that. And so if there is not much difference between this section of the window and this section of the window, we have a low t-value. But if we find somewhere a very big difference where we have a boundary, we find a peak. I used that method in 1986 when I was writing up my PhD research in the Jornada transect in New Mexico. As I said already, we had 91 neutron probes 30 meters apart, and I use a split moving window technique, and here we see different results. And what we see is that if the mean water content along the transect is 0.24, we find some really nice boundaries. If it gets wetter, most of the boundary disappear. You know, everywhere it is wet, and so it's not telling us a lot about the soil. Here it is a little bit, here it is also wet, we see nothing, and here it has been drying out again, and again we see some soil boundaries pop up. This already tells us that if you want to use remote sensing to detect soil boundaries, we cannot rely on one image, as most people do. Look in any book on digital soil mapping, and you see that 90% of all the papers is using one image. I think that this is the wrong approach. At least in the semi-arid region. If you are using this approach then for soil map unit boundaries, we should recognize that not all boundaries are the same. Some are sharp, some are fixed, but also we can have fuzzy boundaries. Another thing is that people often say that we cannot use Landsat to look into the soil profile, because they say the optical bands visible near infrared, mid-infrared have a penetration depth of 0.1 centimeter and the thermal band about 10 centimeter. However, this is not true. Once we have used the Siebel-O-Metric procedure, we get a very clear idea of the root zone soil moisture conditions bare soil up to 15 centimeters, grasses 30, bushes 100, and trees maybe up to 500 centimeters. So using the Siebel-O-Metric approach allows us to get information about the entire soil profile. We just showed you how this works. And now let's look at some soil moisture images that we obtained over the years in the Middle Rio Grande Valley in the Sevilleta National Wildlife Refuge. This is a image of a wet summer, and the lines that you see here, those are the boundaries of the soil map. We see it as all the same. It's exactly the same what I found about 200 kilometers to the south during a wet day or wet period along the Hornada. We cannot detect soils very well. Here we have a dry winter. It's all very dry, and we see already some soil boundaries like here that overlap with the soil moisture map, but not that many. But here, after a wet winter, having the growing season started, here we see quite a bit of correlation between the soil moisture, the soil map units, and the soil moisture pattern. All this was based on one image, but what will happen if we stack all our 20 soil moisture images, then do some kind of a principal component analysis to combine all the information, and then we look at it. And then we see this here. So this is the average roots on soil moisture based on about 20 soil moisture images and an overlay of the soil map. And look here, this soil unit, it's perfectly captured. Here we do not too bad. Here we see this pattern here is captured quite well. Here we see a very good capture here and here. And what we also see is that if we use the Seawaller Metric soil moisture product, we do not only capture quite well the boundaries, but also the internal variability of the soil map. And we know that many soil maps have impurities of 20, 30, maybe 40% if you are in a very difficult area. So what we have been doing then is we took a number of transects and then run the split moving window over it to find the boundaries, and then looked at boundaries on existing soil and landform maps, and then try to see how well this method worked. So here we see all the transects that we used in two areas covered by the maps. And here we see some results. So the here we see the soil boundaries, and the blue dots are boundaries that we detected using the split moving window technique on a Landsat soil moisture image. We did a lot of work there, the frequency, how strong the boundaries were, etc., but I don't have enough time to go into that. But what we see is that very often we detect the soil boundaries really where they are located, taking some georeferencing issues into consideration. But we also find boundaries within the map units. And one question we have is, are these boundaries true or not? Here we see another example where the soil boundaries that we find on the maps are detected by the Landsat soil moisture image. And so our experience is that our approach captured most landform and existing NRCS soil map units. However, we also find boundaries that do not coincide with landform or pre-existing soil map boundaries. And here, for example, we are looking what is in the subsoil. One way to do that is digging soil pits. That is a lot of work. So we also use electromagnetic induction, as what we have here. And with electromagnetic induction, very quickly we can measure the conductivity of the soil profile along a transect. And what we see here, if we then apply the split moving window technique on these conductivity data, we get a strong peak here that correlates with this soil boundary. And we have some minor peaks here corresponding with this. Here we have two soil boundaries that we found using the Landsat soil moisture product, and we also found those with our electromagnetic survey. So we believe that we have a method that probably is quite sensitive for relatively small variations in soil conditions. The soil conditions here, the most important thing was the depth to the calcic horizon. You see here we have that major boundary that is a boundary between a shallow calcic horizon and a deeper one. In conclusion, We think that remote sensing of soil moisture conditions in arid environments reflect changes in soil properties, and therefore we can identify boboundaries using Landsat soil moisture maps. This also will help us to identify changes in location of a boundary over time. Think about fuzzy soil boundaries, and we look forward to your comments on this work and how we can improve upon it and make this an operational tool for the folks that are in charge of soil mapping in the US. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have time for some questions.
You compare your results with the existing soil classification map.
Yes.
To which level? Because we have multiple levels of classification.
Oh, the map we used here was the 1 in 24,000 soil map. And there's a typical scale for NRCS maps. And you see the importance of this land is most high-value agricultural areas have been mapped by hand, and that has been done quite well. But if you have large semi-arid areas of desert soils, it's way too expensive to map all that by hand. Yet, if we want to determine, for example, what the storage can be of CO2 in these soils, CO2 sequestration, then we need to have some kind of a soil map. And I think that this could be a potential application had to quickly map arid and semi-arid soils.
So you talk about looking at changes in soil properties over time. Could it get confused by changes in land cover? Because, again, the plants are sensing what their roots see. So as the land cover changes, you're going to see different depths, and that can confuse the situation maybe a little bit?
Yeah, that is true. You always have to keep in mind with this technique that at the one side you have soil moisture, at the other side you have the rooting depth. And so if you would have big changes in land cover, you would end up with different boundaries. But then don't forget, I'm involved now with a project in Panama where we look at the effect of forest removal from tropical forest to pasture and then secondary reforestation, and that has an effect on the soil. So, okay, you capture the effect of a land use change, but that also is a capture in soil conditions.
I got to make one more comment. I'm a microwave remote sensing scientist, and so I looked at your you said the depth that IR could go is about 10 centimeters. Can you justify 10 centimeters? Because even as a micro remote sensing, I would say that at the best we're doing 5 centimeters.
Yeah, what I mean with thermal band going to a depth of 10 centimeters is that in many soils, if you look at the daily soil temperature flux, it goes maybe 5, 10 centimeters. And so if you have a thermal image, you would get some information up to that depth.